Welcome. This is Winning at Life. It is the Daily Wrap. Live Financial Talk Radio. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. Welcome. The phone number to join in the conversation. And that's right. We like talking about money. And I know you do too. It's how we keep score. 504-260-0995.
I'm your co-host, James Parker. Can I just start with something kind of, you know what I'm going to talk about. It's sort of heavy, not fun, but it would just kind of help me cope.
Okay.
After the day we had a close friend of the show passed away somewhat unexpectedly. And, you know, it's one of these things where you contemplate your own mortality and sort of the meaning of life. And, you know, whether you or not you believe there's a big higher power or a big plan or we're all just spinning around on a rock for no reason, the best course of action, hey, that's the two extremes.
I get it.
The best course of action, whoever's right or whatever gray area you hit in the middle, is to just go through this life trying to be a good person and trying to do some good and trying to use your talents and your abilities to help other people, especially people that are below you. And we lost one of those guys today. One of the guys that gets it, you know, not a guy that's out there trying to milk every opportunity he can for all for himself. This is a guy that was so respected and had developed such a level of expertise at his chosen craft that he's one of those guys he was beyond being able to be fired. And what did he do with that power? Did he use it to skip out of work early or be a jerk to people, which he could have easily done? No, he did two things. One, he showed up to work in shorts and t-shirt and flip-flops if he felt like it, which was pretty common during the summer. And another thing is he sort of made it his mission to call out BS in the hallways of his workplace, whether or not it helped him, whether or not it was in his best interest or not, only if it was the right thing to do and to help other people. And so this is going to be one of those guys to where, you know, at the end of your life, the only thing you get is a little party where you hope some people show up and say some good things about you. And this is going to be one of the guys that has a lot of people show up and say some good things about him. And there's going to be probably 1,000 more that wish they could have made it out there to pay their respects to his loved ones. And we lost a good one today. And really just, as you're going about your day, making these little decisions that are going to add up to what Martin Luther King called the length of life, you know, just try and follow that model. At the end of your life, when they have that little party for you, you're going to have a bunch of people showing up saying, man, that guy really helped me out. You know, that guy really took what God gave him and just tried to do some good. You know, I hope I'm in that category when
everybody has choices and pressures and life to deal with, but it comes down, are you doing something for good? Are you doing something for bad? Are you doing something that's going to take away or something that you're going to add to? And yeah, he was a friend of the show. He had our back. He helped us on our journey over the past 8 years plus. He gave us some warnings, some indicators, some help and guidance. It was kind of all the things important. So yeah, I was shocked. When you texted me, I rang you up and just like, what? I didn't know he was ill. Yeah. Big loss.
I think one of the defining things that builds respect like that is helping somebody, even though there's no way it can come back to you. When you're helping someone out of just pure altruism, that is so rare. The world needs more of it. And I just hope I can live up to that model. You know, I hope I can repay the favors he did for me to the next person coming up, or if I'm ever in a position that he's in, that I'll do the same thing with the situation I'm in. Boy, that's tough. I never get over it, Gregory. It's one thing in life I just can't deal with, and I have not learned as a human being how to deal with close people to me passing away. I hadn't figured it out. I might one day, but I hadn't yet.
You will, my friend. You will. You've got a lot tougher to deal with coming. I talked in the team meeting this morning, I talked about it. And it was a comment somebody made about somebody else, because they're taking a long time to move on. And I said, don't take that as a, because I mentioned it to the team, but I said, do not take that in the wrong way, because you've not experienced having to deal with that, care for somebody that's hanging on. And this isn't something enjoyable for them either, even whether they're aware or not. We all have to, and I've already dealt with it a few times, and it won't be the last either. But you, as well as rest of the team I spoke with, most likely have not at that level, but we still lose friends along the path, because our friends are always not, or no, said that wrong. They are not always our age. We have friends, great dear friends, that are much younger, and we have great and dear friends that are much older. And when you're in a workplace, you're getting to know all these different age groups. You learn from them, you get connected. And just like what we talked about our friend today, is that's a big loss. He brought a lot to the table. We're going to miss him. I know that for sure.
Well, he had the brain, but he also had the personality that made him a likable person. But then he also had the moral fiber to use it all for good. It's just an amazing combination. And one of the things that he embodied is last week when we did the 20 things that rich people do that poor people do not, 20 daily things. That's a guy that embodied that whole constantly keeping yourself updated, constantly with the self-improvement, because he had been in his career for, I guess, about 50 years, and he was up on the latest stuff all day, every day. If there was some breaking technology, and this guy's about 70 years old, I could turn to him and say, hey, well, tell me about X, Y, and Z. And a lot of times he would have the answer without looking it up. And that's just amazing stuff. And man, how powerful is it to have all that experience, but also to have all your tools kept up and all your skills sharpened and staying up with the times?
You know, and that is taking your job and your work, your art, could call it his art. It's what he did, his thing that he was good at. And you could choose to be really the best at it, or kind of just like, yeah, it's 5 o'clock. Let me pick up a 6-pack on the way home, not worry about it. You know, you and I put in a lot of hours into what we do, just like he did, to stay at the top of our game. We could choose to do more, or we could just, hey, it's 5 o'clock. Let's chill. And that's the difference. And something we talked about on that list the other day is putting more into the reading, and more of the reading.
He was one of those guys. And look, you're kind of in the same position. You don't have to work on a Saturday if you really don't want to. You're Gregory Ricks, founder of Gregory Ricks and Associates. You could end that this week if you wanted to. But the extra pays off. This is why you're ahead of so many other people.
Yeah, and the other part is because of what we had a friend a long time ago tell me, be careful what you start.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of cases you have to keep doing it. But, you know, when we had the callers call into the show, it was on Saturday, we had so many callers, and so many of them were like, you know, they said, we appreciate what you do. I always listen. I'm always learning. Thank you for what you do. You know, how do you quit that? I can't. It's like, we need you. We need that information. We're listening. And then we had the 21-year-old call into the show. It's that pup kind of learning about money.
Donald and Slidell. Yeah.
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 That's why we keep doing this.
Well, when I wrote the notes for the podcast this weekend, I know what you're talking about, because it was 3 calls in a row. And you're right. That was some inspiring stuff. And when I'm in the show, you know, we kind of get wrapped up doing it. You're like, yeah, that's a nice compliment, but what am I saying next? Right. But then when you get to sit down, you get to listen to it as part of the audience. Yeah, that's very inspiring. I'll give up a couple more Saturdays for that.
Yep.
All right. You want to talk about some financial news? I mean, there's a whole daily grind going on that we've been talking existential, and we can zoom right back down to the micro if you want.
Yeah, something I'm going to cover later in the show today also. This guy's wife stole some $500,000 ill-gotten gains.
Okay.
I believe we'll talk about it, but then the IRS sends him a bill.
Is this a news story or is this a story you found?
It is a news story I read this morning. I just thought it was a kind of, you know.
I haven't heard this.
You know, your husband and wife, what your spouse does is on you too. Oh, really?
Yeah.
What? I didn't know about that.
Honey.
She didn't report those stolen gains.
What did I tell you
when
about?
When we did that joint tax return.
Right. It's a tax issue. What did I tell you about shoe shopping and not reporting your stolen money? Well, I wanted to talk about the small updates we have on what's going on with Elon Musk, our favorite billionaire that might end up in jail. But Elon Musk confirmed reports this
morning.
He will
be the smartest guy in that facility, I'll tell you that.
Yeah, in prison. Because
he's pretty much the smartest guy in any room. He just... Like other people we know, friends, distant relatives, near relatives, congressmen, leaders, you know, heads of state. A lot of people shouldn't always just type out what they think. I know. Not all of it.
Yeah. Whether you're Elon Musk or Roseanne Barr.
Or one of the smartest car or rocket guys you know. Just, you know.
Well, he did come right up and high-five one of our theories that we proposed on both Friday and Saturday show, and that's that there must be something going on with the Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, and he says that he's been approached multiple times over the past 2 years to discuss funding for privatization, and he said the most recent talk was July 31st. Now, that doesn't sound like the same as having funding secured. Because wasn't that the word he used in Twitter? Secure?
Okay. How much is in the sovereign fund?
Yeah, well, now you're asking for details that are beyond the report.
Lot of money.
Yeah, but
more than what he needs.
We had a couple of chats over the last 4 years versus secured. 504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We're Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks.
Winning It Life. This is the Daily Wrap. We do it every evening, 7 o'clock. Like this past Saturday we talked about. That one's a 3-hour show we do live, 10 to 1. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. James Parker's here with me. If you'd like to join the conversation, talk about your mutual funds, your 401k, that pension, that sovereign fund you'd like to build, give us a call, 504-260-0995. You could email us, text us, call us from the app. It's the Winning at Life app. Go to your app store, download it, and connect to the Winning at Life Nation. We were talking about what's this sovereign fund?
Saudi
Arabia is building its $2 trillion fund. So it's somewhere.
Wait, you're
in
supposed
the...
to say it like Dr. Evil.
How's that?
$2 trillion.
So what if they want to buy a car company?
Yeah, $70 billion.
Oh, electric one at that.
Okay, how many?
So when you kind of say, if they say, yeah, dude, if you'd like to take this thing private, we're in. And then you kind of say, well, how much are they worth? And I could see how he would text. Yeah, it's already. What was his text? It's.
Funding secured.
Funding. Yeah. The dude said, I'll give you the money. Well, what more do you need?
Yeah, maybe paperwork.
He does have $2 trillion on access to some $2 trillion. We as a country here, how close are we getting that? And we've got more debt than that. But as far as from having money, Apple's worth $1 trillion. They don't have that kind of cash on hand. But that's right. The closest we get to having this fund.
What is Apple's cash on hand? Don't they have like a quarter of $1 trillion going now? They have like $250 billion. But check this out. The Saudi Sovereign Wealth Fund, $2 trillion. Here's an interesting report. The federal government collected a record amount of revenue for through the first 10 months of fiscal 2018. $1.4 trillion in income taxes.
Our
country over the last 10 months has only collected $1.4 trillion in income taxes. That's not all the money they've collected. There's other taxes top of that.
And they spent more than that, though.
Oh, they spent a lot more than that because here, the total collection in total taxes for last year, we actually have that number, $2.8 trillion is what they collected, and they spent a little bit more than that. What was that deficit? Oh, my goodness. So, yeah, by the way, we're already running a $683 billion deficit. We still have 2 months left in the fiscal year. That's not so great, guys. We need to get that down.
Where does this come from, the Saudi's sovereign fund? They're stepping up plans to turn its sovereign wealth fund into a global giant. It's the public investment fund is central to the government's effort to diversify the economy away from what?
Oil.
They want to be relevant beyond oil, so you have to plan for it now. Under the plan known as Vision 2030, the fund, which plans to control more than $2 trillion by 2030. So they are investing in our markets. They are investing in companies. They are making acquisition. They're building cities that are more than just an oil town. So if that gives you an idea, yeah, they have a grand plan going forward, and I guess it might entail having a electric car company.
If you were the Saudis, you have one industry and one industry only, but you have all the money in the world to start up any industry you want going forward to try and take the future.
The battery industry.
It would be something in tech. And it would be something that's being newly developed. You don't want to go try and chasing the next iPhone, and you don't want to go try and chasing the next, you know, PlayStation 4 or whatever. You want to make your own thing. And so I think that's what's on their mind. They want to be a tech company. They don't have a Microsoft. They don't have a Facebook or a Google. And I'm not saying they should, but for $2 trillion, you should be able to make a serious run at it. You should be able to jumpstart your own tech sector by basically buying someone else's tech sector, because once they have Tesla, then they are the number one leading cutting edge of battery technology on the planet, if you believe what Elon Musk has been tweeting, which is, if it's not true, it's at least close to true. They're at least on the cutting edge somewhere in the conversation of the biggest, baddest battery tech. But yeah, I would start there. I mean, you would think they would start, I don't know. It's hard to get in their head, but any of these tech things, like getting into semiconductors or getting into rare earth elements or getting into some of these other little nuanced niche markets that everyone uses, but despite that, they're just not that big. Lithium only comes from a couple of places, but everyone needs just a little hair of it in their phone. You know, it's going to be interesting to watch, because they really are in a position with $2 trillion. You can leapfrog yourself from third world to first world in a generation if they play that right. But central planning, it almost never plays it right. It's almost impossible to guess what's going to be the next big thing in 10 years. What's the next big thing in 10 years? Go ahead and try and guess. Write it down. Check in 10 years. Because if you had asked me 10 years ago what's going to be the biggest thing in 10 years, I'd have probably said MySpace. If you'd asked me 20 years ago, I would have said the biggest company in the world is probably going to be AOL, America Online. They're everywhere. Everyone uses them. They have a monopoly. In fact, I'm concerned about their dominance in the marketplace. Now, it's just such a hard task. So we're watching that. Elon, though, I do not think he is. I don't think he's out of the woods on this one. Unless the Saudi Arabia's public investment fund has some emails they're going to share with us, or maybe they can just show up and save the day. They're like, no, we got it. Maybe they can work a deal out with him. Say, yeah, actually, Elon's right. We had a deal worked out for $60 billion. Elon's like, I thought it was $80 billion. They're like, do you want to go to prison or not? That might be a conversation that's being had right now via translator. All right, I want to talk about something else that's sort of tangentially connected to the oil industry. The presidential administration has proposed two major changes to federal vehicle regulations. First off, it is abandoning its predecessor's plan that was announced in 2002 to nearly double the car's fuel economy by 2025, which would require a fleet of cars, if you were going to sell cars in the United States, that they would have to average 54.5 miles per gallon. But that's ridiculous. I mean, for one thing, that mandate was made in 2012. It doesn't have to be reached till 2025. Oh, okay. So you're going to go ahead and put a law or a rule in place now that's going to have negative consequences, but, you know, 10 years after you leave office, if it's such a good idea, why don't you do it now? But here nor there. The other one would eliminate a waiver that gives California the right to create their own state-level emission rules. And what happens is, by de facto marketplace action, since you have to sell cars in California, you have to make your cars compliant to the California regulations, which means California is basically setting the air standards for the entire rest of the country. And that should be going by the wayside. So I'm not sure if Saudi Arabia is necessarily in favor of that. I don't know. The 54.5 miles per gallon, I don't even know how you can mandate that. I mandate that technology moves so fast over the next 10 years that it reaches this arbitrary target that I think it should reach. Says who? You know, there's a limit to how much energy is in a gallon of gas and how far you can expect that to push a 1,000-pound collection of steel and fiberglass or even carbon nanofibers or whatnot. And I don't know if anybody can get 54.5 miles out of 1 gallon of gasoline. There's just a limit to
how much
energy.
There's only so much energy's there. You've got to come out up with something else. John Goodenough strives to transform the battery world with a second breakthrough in speed and captivity. See, in the race to make the next leap in batteries, there's a 96-year-old who won't give up. 4 decades ago, John helped invent the battery that is used to charge cell phones, iPads, and many other of today's electronics. His work made batteries more powerful and portable by introducing lithium and cobalt oxide to their inner workings. Like, dude, why didn't I like focus on that when I was like introduced to batteries at age 8, you know, how they work in elementary school.
I know, because I was messing around with cesium and germanium. Stupid me, right? That's what I was doing when I was 8.
I just thought, you know, lead and water was good enough, you know.
Right. Good enough for my dad.
Dr. Goodenough wants to kill off that creation.
Wait,
by...
his name's Goodenough?
Look, here it is.
You keep saying that. It really is good enough, and it's spelled good enough.
Yes, good enough. He is good enough to be in the battery business.
His great-grandfather came across on Ellis Island and said, what's your name? He said, good enough. They said, good enough? He goes, yeah.
Yeah, whatever. Yeah,
good enough.
He wants to kill off that creation by removing the cobalt that meant his lithium-ion battery could charge faster and last longer. In April, the World War II vet published research with co-authors that said is being used to develop a prototype of a liquid-free and cobalt-free battery. He hopes to live long enough to see that happen at age 98.
504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
The world's in the toilet and the market's in the tank. Well, I can't fix that.
He can't fix that. We can't fix that either, but we can report it to you. We can tell you what's going on, help you make some decisions. I can't fix a drink. That's not going to help us, is it? This is Winning at Life. And yeah, I like that song. It's kind of that summer song. Like, oh, it's so hot. Like today was, this was a real August day without the rain. the liquid sunshine to help chill it some.
Mm-hmm.
I complained about the rain last week every day. Even affected my time out at the race car track. I like it, but it's all going to be wet. I see the clouds. It rained. But today, I missed it. Missed that rain. This is Winning at Life. I'm your host, Gregory Ricks. And no, I'm not a weatherman. I kind of do financial stuff all day, every day. I'm a financial advisor. I help you find where you are on the path, where you're going, how to make adjustments, give you guidance, help you know the rules of those 401ks, explain how annuity really works, give you our philosophy and rules on investing money. If you would like some help during my day job that I do every day, you can call the office 504-832-9200 or go to gregoryricks.com.
All right, a quick highlight here from Saturday's show. When you talk about 7702 plans, Gregory, John and Violet picked up something that I'm not sure we've put down every time we've talked about it, and that's who qualifies. How do you qualify for it?
John from Violet.
All right. Welcome to the show, John. You're on Winning at Life with Greg Ricks. How can we help you?
I wanted to find out if 7702, you have to have earned income in order to participate in that.
You do not have to have earned income. You have to have after-tax income.
Assets,
you can't do it pre-tax. You know, that's one of the things we always talk about. I was doing training at the office Thursday morning, kind of became impromptu, but that's where we were talking about what's our three things we'd really like. Pre-tax, put the money to work pre-tax, grow it tax-deferred, and take it out tax-free. Gosh, that's super, super difficult. Why? You're probably getting in trouble with the IRS because it takes just the right circumstances for that to happen. But we can do two out of three.
It was from rental income. So that wouldn't make any difference in association with the 7702?
No. It's after-tax income that goes in. And, you know, we have a number of ways where people have idle money that they need to put to work. It could be money from the sale of non-qualified stock, you know, meaning it's stock that's not in an IRA or anything. Profits from that, and they've got a bunch of, well, what do I do with this? And a lot of times you hear callers call in and say, well, I've got an extra $5,000 a month after I pay the bills and do my IRAs and all that. What I do? So we always hear them talking about that. And another circumstance is where I've got too much money in qualified money. My 401k is too big. My IRA is too big. I've got too much there. R&D is going to be big. We can shift that money long as it works mathematically for them, but we're going to pay taxes on it and put it in 7702. And the ultimate answer is how much can we take out tax-free down the road?
Gotcha. Thank you so much.
You're welcome.
Thanks for calling, John. All right, so the 7702 plan, everyone on board, everyone know what that is? Can you
look, it is in the tax code. Basically, in the tax code, it defines something specifically. It's not a retirement plan, and I speak of multiple sources of income is what you should be planning. You should have money coming from a Roth. You should have money coming from a 401k. You should have money coming from Social Security unless you've opted out by working, say, for the state of Louisiana that does not participate. Then it's probably not one of the sources, but most people have it as a source of income. Some people have rental properties as a source of income. Is rental property a retirement plan? Well, if you want to call it that, you can. Is a Roth a retirement plan? No, I think of it as a stream of income that has a certain tax benefit. I think you should have tax diversity, and I think you should have multiple sources of income. You could have a source of income called your savings account at the bank. Well, you said, well, it doesn't get much return, but if you pile it up big enough, it can be a source of income. It might get depleted over time, but once again, it's a source of income. All these things pulled together should be considered a retirement plan, meaning what is a retirement plan? It's how are you going to source income when you're no longer bringing in earned income. Wouldn't that sound like a good definition for it? Because that is, how am I going to bring in income when I'm no longer working? Well, you want me to define 7702 a little bit more? Okay, I'll do that. It's basically 7702 is basically, it's of the U.S. tax code that defines life insurance pays a tax-free death benefit. Now, here's a twist. What if you go in and overfund a life insurance policy? Because when you go in and study some of those, like a indexed universal life, how does it grow? What's the cap on returns, or how is the growth linked? And when you look at some of that, you're probably going to think is like, gosh, I would like more of that because I'm growing. Well, it's life insurance. Yeah, but I'm not using it as that. I'm using it as a max growth tool that I can overfund. What's the max I can put out into that I can get that return and later take out money as income? But I don't want it as distribution because it's also a tool that has something else in it. It's the element of I can borrow money out of it. Oh, well, you're going to pay an interest rate on borrowing. Yeah, but I'm not paying taxes on loans. Just bear with me and think about this. I'm going to max fund. I'm not paying a lot of premium rest of my life. I just want to shove as much money as I can the next few years into it that meets with my capability of doing so. And then I want to let that stew and build and get bigger. And then I'm going to start borrowing money down there. I'm going to take money out, but it's going to be through borrowing the money. So when you borrow money, let's see, you borrow money out of your house. Does it go in your 1040? If you go down to the bank, say, look, I need $20,000. I want to borrow some money. Okay. Yeah, we trust you, James. Your name's good enough. I'll loan you the money. If you got to put that on your 1040.
No. And when I swipe my credit card, that doesn't go on my 1040, yeah. Whatever they loan me there. Either.
Now,
I
if
see
you
what you're saying.
Default on it, that's probably a different situation with the IRS.
Gotcha.
When you think about it. What if you borrowed you're borrowing against your house. What if you borrowed more out of your house than it was worth? Would that be a profit? Could technically. Okay. Can you borrow more out of a life insurance than you put in originally? And the answer is yes.
Because you get the growth on those extra assets.
You get the growth. And we've seen that a lot. We've helped people create that where they take out more than they ever put in. Well, wouldn't that be taxable? Yeah. But when you die, the death benefit will pay off that loan. And why does that wash? Well, the death benefit is tax-free. And if you borrowed more out than you put in, that's a taxable event that gets washed by the death benefit. So therefore, what I've explained to you is another source of income that you can create with your other sources to complete an overall revenue plan for income. And you can create a tax-free income stream that gets washed when you die. I know it's complicated, a lot to absorb and the returns. Yeah, but I just gave you the overall look of what a 7702 is because you could look it up and it's defined by the tax code. And look, I just Googled it because I can tell you what it says. And you've got some where a 702J retirement plan demystified. Fool.com has a description on it, but it all reverts back as Even at the top part, it says 7702 is a marketing term. No, it isn't. It's in the tax code. Now you know how the core structure works. Now, how can you win with that?
504-260-0995. I'm James Parker. We are Winning It Life with Gregory Ricks. Hey, how you doing? It's Winning It Live with Gregory Ricks. I'm your co-host, James Parker. If you have a financial situation and you're not quite sure what to do, Gregory Ricks is a Hall of Fame financial advisor who would love to take a shot at it. 504-260-0995. Man, I saw your schedule again this week. You're going to be handling some other people's financial situations over the next few days. It's just as bad as last week almost, Gregory.
I'm busy.
You need to give a seminar on how to...
busy. Everybody's busy.
You need to give a seminar or a workshop or an online education course on how to handle a crazy schedule.
I don't have time for that.
Right, because you hear about those guys. That it's almost a joke when you see the movie about the businessman whose wife has to schedule a 15-minute phone call with him. You are almost to that level. And there are plenty of people who have to schedule phone calls with you, not your wife at this point. But that's a whole nother skill set that you've had to evolve. And a lot of that was right in front of me because you were a busy man when we met, but a little bit more so now. Where'd you pick that stuff up?
What now?
The evolution of how you handle your schedule over from when we first met to now. It's a little different. So where'd you pick that up? Where'd you learn that?
Honestly, I believe I figured it out as I went, but commonly thinking about it is others that are really busy, hectic schedules, like physicians.
Mm-hmm.
Think about them. How do they handle that? But of course, I have to spend time with people. Not to say they all don't, though. Right. Some of my doctors might get mad at me, but I'm having to reschedule a doctor's appointment, and then it's kind of defined in two parts. Is this just a regular visit or is it a procedure? Well, it's a procedure. Oh, I can't handle that for you. You've got to speak to the doctor's nurse. I said, well, why? Well, the procedures are typically scheduled a little bit longer than the visits. Okay. I get that. And I still haven't got it. This was like Thursday, and I'm like, now we're after hours on Monday, and I've got to, I think I'm going to set me an alarm to call them back tomorrow because I thought they were going to call me back, but I guess they're too busy to call back. They might need a great team like I have to make the callbacks.
All right. Did you have a 7702 follow-up?
No, I'm pretty much good with that. We really went into that pretty deep there the moment.
Can one day, this would be a good approach to it. We should make a little T-chart. And on one side, we'll put a Roth IRA. On the other side, we'll put a 7702.
You can't, look, we go back to what's the perfect way to build retirement income. What three things would you like? I want to put it away before I'm taxed. I want it to grow tax deferred. And I want to take it out without paying taxes, like the Roth, tax-free income. Well, I just don't know where you get all three. What we have is, depending on how you're taking income, you're getting a mix of that. The 401k is pre-tax, tax deferred, taxes ordinary income coming out. Roth is after tax, gross tax deferred technically, comes out tax free. What else? Oh, just say non-qualified annuity. You're putting in an after tax, growing tax deferred, but coming out taxed as ordinary income. Non-qualified stocks, after tax money to buy stocks. It grows if the stock is growing. So we assume growth there over time. And then when you go to take it out, it's taxed as capital gain. So it's a little bit better deal regarding the taxes, but you've got that risk on the up and down. Using max funded life insurance as an income strategy. I'm not worried. And when you probably wonder, it's like, what do you mean it's max funded and I'm not worried about the insurance side? The insurance side, what's the purpose of the insurance side if I'm using it as an income tool?
To wash the loan, basically.
It's to wash the loan and make it tax-free on distribution. I need to have that tax-free element. But I don't get this structure of building money and borrowing it out without it being life insurance. They approved this like long time ago. In 1911, they even declared it a commodity that I could transfer it to you, James, if I wanted to. As long as I'm living, I'm the insured, it still works. So I could transfer ownership to you and I could make the maintenance guy at my building the beneficiary. And I'm still the insured. I can't change that. So that also kind of makes it a commodity. But what we're wanting to use it for is its benefits is I can put money in. Once again, I can't get it in there pre-tax, but I can get it in there after tax. I can grow it tax deferred, and there's a distribution method to where I could take out over time more than I put in. And the more that I taking out is coming out as a loan. And one day I'm going to die. As long as I keep all that intact mathematically and plan for it, I'm going to die. And this loan is subtracted from what? The death benefit. Yeah, that's how it works. And the balance will be paid to the beneficiary, which in my case is going to be my wife, but she's not receiving any tax bill or anything from the IRS. And we've income stream like the one projected that Nicholas did for himself, 30 years, $500 a month, $180,000 going in and then taking income from it. For 30 years is projected to be about $1 million gross, a bit like $822,000 more than he put in. He's right. Projected to take out. And what makes that excess untaxed at his death? The life insurance. It's going to be deducted from the face amount of the life insurance and the expense of the death benefit. Here's what I'm getting. You say, oh, it's life insurance expense. No, it isn't, because you're thinking of it as paying only a premium and then you die. Yeah, that's the expensive way to do it. But the inexpensive way is the early years. We don't have that money built up in income. Okay, yeah, you've got death benefit if I don't live long enough to pay this out. But the expense ratio of that coverage over 60 years is 0.5%. That's like nothing. I bet you you're paying more on your managed money. I bet you you're paying more on your money in a mutual fund. I bet you you're paying more on that variable annuity than 0.5%. So when you kind of look at it, gosh, that's really inexpensive to put this together. Yeah. And you have to structure it and make sure you follow the guidelines and you don't kill the death benefit part. Then it works.
All right. So I'm doing this math over here real quick. You're saying he's putting in $500 a month. Is he putting in an extra $500 or just $500 solid period?
A month for 30 years.
For 30 years. Okay.
At $6,000 a year.
So for that same 30 year span, he's going to turn around and get about $3,000 worth a month out of that. Does that calculation sound about right?
Well, it's over 30 years.
Right. And it's comes 1. To about 1. A million out.
Remember, he puts 180 in.
Uh-huh. So yeah, he's getting about 6 times out of it what he puts into it. You do have the death benefit stuff still built in. So if you set this whole thing up and then, you know, something happens and you die far before you plan, the death benefit just goes to your family anyway. So you're not losing any of that money. That's a heck of a multiple.
In the end, most of the death benefit's going to wash the loan. And the purpose, what we wanted is the tax-free income. Does there a place on the 1040 for borrowed money? No. There is a place for it if you take out more than you put in, and that's why you need that part of the IRS code that says life insurance is a tax-free death benefit. Can we wash the loan? Now, when you're young like you are now, is, you know, why do you need life insurance? Well, if I don't live long enough, I want to make sure my kids go to college, the house gets paid for, wife has money to continue doing things without me.
But this takes care of that. This takes care of that too.
It takes care of that too. But if you live long enough, what are you more worried about when you're 60 and 70 and 80? You're more, I don't have to pay for kids' college. The house is paid for, and the wife might be better off without me. But with that said, while I'm around, I want monthly income. And if I have a choice, I'd rather it be tax-free. You're more worried about the income on the back end, where on the front end, you're worried about the death benefit. Well, I'm not so worried about the death benefit. I'm worried about getting that plan in place for the income and planning to live a long time. Oh, we're almost out of time.
Yeah.
If you'd like more discussion about this topic and all these other things that I deal with, you can give my office a call. I am a financial advisor, planner, money manager. We'll help you build a portfolio that fits your risk number. All you've got to do is give us a call during the daytime. 504-832-9200. GregoryRicks.com.
Yeah, at the beginning of the show, we mentioned a friend of the show passed away. Thank you very much for all the kind comments on Facebook that are already coming in. You guys are great. We do this Monday through Fridays and Saturdays. Check out our podcasts and live shows at the Winning at Life app, winningatlife.com. I'm James Parker. We are Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks.
Winning at Life with Gregory Ricks is a copyright of Down South Productions for the private use of our audience. Gregory Ricks is an investment advisor representative with Global Financial Private Capital. Any unauthorized use of this broadcast without expressed consent is prohibited. Find show contact information and podcast.